Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Our news, talk, and entertainment show where truth is our bitch and we go places that other talk shows will never be able to go. We welcome you to the show. If this is, you know, if you're just checking in with us here in this final hour, our news and information hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. Very big sports milestone yesterday. I thought I'd mention it here. We're not breaking the news, but if you are a baseball fan, if you're a sports fan at all, you probably heard that Matt Cain of the San Francisco Giants pitched the first perfect game in the history of the Giants franchise going back to the 19th century as the New York Gothams. I mean, we're talking way back, you know.
What do you mean a Gotham?
That's what they used to be called way back. The New York Giants. And then they came to San Francisco in the late 1950s. And Matt Cain, who talked openly of his lifelong dream of throwing a perfect game, no longer has to dream about it. Cain threw the first perfect game in the Giants' long and storied history on Wednesday night, striking out a career-high 14 in a 10-0 beating of the visiting Houston Astros. What a game to go to at a home game. 10-0, just a beatdown, and the cat pitches a perfect game. That's a beautiful thing, man.
Yeah, about that. Is that ballpark? I don't know nothing about that ballpark. Is it cold?
Hell, I don't know, man. I will tell you one thing, though, that happened before the game. Matt Cain getting ready to go out and pitch the ball game is along with Dustin Johnson, the golfer, who had been golfing, I guess, with the guys at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Now they're at home plate at the ballpark. And this is hours before Cain is scheduled to pitch the game. He's with Dustin Johnson, the golfer. They're at home plate there the stadium. And Cain and the manager are looking at each other. They're looking at the stands. And then they look over at Brian Sabian, who's the general manager, to get approval for Cain to hit a golf ball because he was watching Dustin Johnson do this. So Sabian didn't want to give him approval because this guy, he just signed this pitcher to a $127 million deal before the season started. I guess he got his money's worth out of him with a perfect game. But nonetheless, Sabian said, I just looked away. And Cain hits a 310-yard drive into McCovey Cove.
Man, that's right out of the ballpark.
Yeah. He did. He flew, just hit it right into, that's a baseball player, so he's an athlete, so it stands to reason the guy's going to be good at a lot of sports, man. He hit this thing on the fly from home plate. He hits a golf ball into San Francisco Bay, 310 yards away. This is after a couple of weeks ago at the, not a couple of weeks ago, excuse me, in February, he's at the Pebble Beach National Pro-Am, and he hit a 342-yard drive. A 342-yard drive. So this dude hits a golf ball like a monster, and he's a pitcher of note now. He's in the history books, and he signed in April a $127 million six-year contract, the largest deal for a right-hand pitcher in baseball history. And so here he makes history last night, pitching the first perfect game in Giant history.
How do you know in a perfect game?
A perfect game is simply this. Three up, three down, man. That's a perfect game.
You got to strike out everybody.
No, you don't have to strike out everybody. No.
No, you just got to get them out.
You can't walk anybody, okay? I don't even think, if I'm correct in assuming, I think they might, you know, because you know how they like to fudge things for the record book and say, well, it's a perfect game because there was an error in the field. Sometimes they will. But I don't think they can call it a perfect game. They call it a no-hitter, even if a run is scored.
How do you do that? How do you get a no-hitter, get a run?
Well, if a guy gets on base because of an error, and there are a series of errors, or there are balks or walks, and there have been no-hitters that guys have pitched that they've lost. There was a very famous no-hitter pitched in the late 1950s. The guy lost the game. But be that as it may, a perfect game is basically three up and three down, man. You get everybody out that you face, and you do it over the course of a nine-inning game.
What if it goes into extra innings?
What if it goes into extra innings?
That could go into extra game. In an extra inning, if it's going to be perfect.
What did you call that?
The inning, man. It's called inning.
Oh. You don't even know it's called an inning?
That was a guinea.
A guinea? No, it's an inning. Yeah, it could be. It could be a 0-0 tie, so it could go into extra innings.
Better put the game at the 0-0 tie?
I don't know. No, it's not. Well, it's nine innings. Who knows, man? Like I say, sports writers and official scores, and baseball especially, they keep making up new rules as we go along. Now they got this thing called, what is it called now? I don't know, man. There's all kinds of different kinds of home runs, this, that, this, that, this, that. So anyway, perfect game is 3-up, 3-down. Now, we already had a perfect game this year pitched by, I think, a member of the Chicago White Sox.
How many perfect games have been a whole in the history of the whole of the of the of the whole
Yeah, but been a whole in the, ever since they did baseball.
I don't know the answer to that, you guys. Ever since they quote did baseball.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know that there's a modern era.
What's that?
Modern era is considered to be following the two league coming into existence of two major leagues. That is, the National League existed, and then the American League came into existence in 1900. And I think that was the year, or 1901. And so that is considered the modern era of baseball. Then there's also the live ball era.
What's that?
The live ball era is when they began to tighten the ball. They began, they tightened up the actual, how do I say this, man? It's
No, they make it out of string, you know that.
Yeah, I never, when they tried to make it out of string, I didn't believe it.
Well, they don't make it out of string, yeah, but they got rawhide. So when they tightened the ball up enough so that it had a little more action. So before the live ball era.
When was the live ball era?
That was probably after World War I, okay? I'm not exactly sure the year. Before they introduced the new tightly wound live ball, if you will, they had a looser wound ball that didn't carry as much. And I think the guy that had the home run, the season home run record before that, was a guy named Home Run Baker, and he had 18.
How'd a guy get a name like Home Run Baker and all that? If they had black people, it'd be different.
How can you say that? You can't, no way, no way.
Yeah, I do. That's why they didn't have no black players, and everybody sucked.
No, no. Look, Robert, I won't argue with you about the fact they didn't have black players. You really didn't know. I mean, frankly, you know how they call it the Negro Leagues?
Yeah.
I call that era of baseball the Caucasian Leagues because think about it, man. I mean, you really didn't know. But the point that I'm making here is even black players are not going to be jacking the ball out, man, with a ball that just doesn't have all the action that the new live ball had. So this guy's hitting 18 home runs. The next thing you know, they introduced the live ball, and here come guys like Babe Ruth, and he's not, and Jimmy Fox, guys, they're knocking the ball out of the ballpark at 50, 60 home runs a year, 40, 50 home runs a year. So it definitely changed the game in terms of the hitting and certainly in terms of the home runs. It made it more of the fans would enjoy it even more. I mean, that's the whole name of the game, man. That's the name of any game. That's the name of any sport. Any entertainment package is to make it more attractive to the fans. So there you have it.
How old is a New York Giant team?
They're over 100 years old. I don't know exactly. 1880s, I think, is when the New York Giants. And you know that they didn't just say, okay, we're going to have a team called the New York Giants. They didn't do it that way in those days. They just said, we're going to have a baseball team. And in those days, the team would call themselves the Nationals because they played in the National League. I mean, later, when the American League came into existence, they called them, well, we have the New York Nationals and the New York Americans. That means they had the New York American League team, which became the Yankees.
But they call them the Yankees? They call them what?
They call them the New York Americans. Same thing with the Boston Red Sox became the Boston Americans because they already had a National League team, the Boston Braves.
They became Cleveland Braves, right?
Not the Cleveland Braves.
No, the Atlanta Braves, the Cleveland Braves.
They're the Indian.
Oh, forget it, man. You guys are too stupid to talk to about this stuff, you know?
What do you mean?
Don't you know the Atlanta Braves, the Cleveland Indians? How the hell are you going to get Indian out of that?
That's what an Indian is.
Right, I understand that, but they already got the Cleveland Indians. That leaves the Braves. Now, where do you think they play?
I think in Atlanta. I'm not sure.
Well, you might. There you go. That's a great call, man. Nice guess. God.
Where do the Indians come from?
Who?
Cleveland Indians.
They always were in Cleveland.
They didn't come from Milwaukee or anything, did they? Because I know the Braves did.
Boy, bud, I'm telling you.
What?
That's right. Every Indian team came out of Milwaukee. The Indians did? The Braves did? Maybe even the Stanford Indian came out of there. Oh, wait a minute. They're not the Stanford Indian anymore. They're the Stanford Cardinal. So anyway, congratulations, Matt Cain, for the perfect game and the perfect season and the perfect salary. I'm sure you've got the perfect wife and you've got the perfect job and you're a perfect guy, man. Way to do it. And then there's the rest of us.
Yay!
We'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. It is our news and information hour. How can it get any better than that, man? I don't know. We'll find some news, you know. Keep spinning the smile button here, man. We'll see what else we got. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don't forget philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass and become a member of our BSP family.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Well, I know one guy that we can go to for baseball knowledge and baseball information, and that is Harvey Wireman, who is an attorney at law and retired now. And Harvey, since your days of you were an attorney both as a private criminal defense attorney, you did a lot of work with the ACLU, but you were a big baseball fan through it all, weren't you?
I don't think there was a Friday that they had a day game, you know, because in those days you had some of the day, and I was working in Chicago, so
the Cubs?
Yeah, the Cubs. We'd go and see them, you know.
Now, I'm looking at the stats here, and by the way, since you retired, do you go to a lot of baseball?
Yeah, you know, we take in as many. I've got my granddaughter and my daughter who come visit, you know, and we get, I've got a lady now that I'm seeing.
What is her name?
Well, you know, wouldn't you like to know?
Okay.
Oh, no, her name I don't know.
You don't know the name of, she's really important to you, huh?
No, she's very important to me, and I'm not kidding, but I forgot her name.
I'll tell you, you're going to have to remember that name before she hits the door, huh?
Don't worry about it, okay? I know what her name is, but I can't remember it now. But, yeah, we go to games. We do a lot of... we go to baseball games. But the last perfect game that I saw pitched was the Len Barker game, and I was in Toronto for... it wasn't in Toronto. I'll tell you where it was. It was in Cleveland. He was pitching for the Cleveland Indians. And I was there taking a case of a guy that was accused of blowing up I think it was a nursery or something.
Good Lord.
Well, no. It was a nursery, like a plants.
Plants?
Yes, you know.
Like for gardening?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God, I thought when you said blew up a nursery.
No. I'm not going to defend it. You mean with babies?
Yeah.
I'm not going to. No, he blew up a nursery. And I have to be honest with you, and I shouldn't say this, but the nursery he blew up, I'm glad he did, because they had robbed me. They've been robbing me for years on plant food, on even something as lousy as a hose. You think you could go in and buy a garden hose, and you're not going to get robbed. You're not going to get held up, okay?
Yeah.
That's what they did. So when I found out this guy had literally blown up the whole nursery late one night, I went ahead and took the case.
What happened?
Well, he went to prison, but I said to him, I shook his hand. I said, thank you. He said, well, thank you for trying your best. I said, no, thank you for blowing that nursery up. And I said, I tried, but I don't know.
Harvey Wireman, that's about the weirdest story I've ever heard. All right, so anyway, you saw the Len Barker perfect game. What other perfect games do you remember?
Well, you know, everybody talks about the Don Larson.
The World Series.
Yeah, the World Series. He beat the Boston Dodgers.
Brooklyn Dodgers.
The Brooklyn Dodgers. And then the other perfect game I think people talk an awful lot about is Sandy Koufax.
Sandy Koufax, right?
Why do you keep correcting me?
Because his name is Koufax.
Well, what did I say?
Koufax.
Let me see. I got to get my glasses. Honey, get Grandpa's.
You know, every time your granddaughter goes to get those glasses, she comes back with the Disneyland one.
Yeah, hold on. Hey, honey, don't bring Grandpa to Disneyland. No, you're right. She brings me those big giant ones.
Yeah, she brings you the big pink ones or something.
Honey, don't bring Grandpa the the big giant ass, she did it anyway. God almighty, this kid's stupid. Hi, baby, don't. Bring Grandpa the glaze. All right, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. Hold on, Phil. Would you get me my reader glasses, please? Get those big, giant, oversized ones out of here. They got kaleidoscope or something. I'm going to go blind. All right, I got my glasses. Sandy Cone Fax. Who is David Cone Fax?
David Cone? What? You better get a new doctor or something.
A new doctor?
A new eye doctor, man, because you can't read what you're looking at.
Okay, here it is. The game everybody remembers here in Los Angeles is when Koufax pitched that perfect game over the Cub. It was a 1-0 game, September of 1965. And I remember the game because the Dodger was...
Why do you call him the Dodger and the Cub?
Because I don't know whether they've got so many singularized teams now. They heat, you know, and this kind of nonsense. So I just singularize it now. I don't give a sweet Jesus.
So everything is singular.
Yeah, so anyway, Koufax pitched this perfect game. Now the Dodger was on its way to the World Series. And
what now, why is it the World Series?
Will you let me finish something to say? Jesus.
Well, because I don't even know that you're speaking English anymore.
What?
Hold on. Yeah?
Yeah, you're on the phone.
Yeah, Margaret.
Well, why don't you let him just... I find it very interesting what Harvey's saying. You're interrupting him.
He's going World Series, and...
He's singularizing because he's an older man. Look, I live with a husband who has gender confusion.
Why are you people talking about me like I'm in a wheelchair and someone's dabbing at the moisture on my ass?
No, I don't mean to do that. She called up.
Harvey, I'm calling up to tell Phil to let you... talk the way you want to.
Thank you. I didn't think I needed permission.
I just don't know what you're talking about.
You're trying to tell me that when I say the L.A. Dodger and the Cub and Sandy Koufax pitched a perfect game, you don't know what that means.
Koufax?
I said I singularize it.
You understand now, Phil?
Yeah, no, I don't. Koufax is not a plural name. That's just a name. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, why don't I just relax and let his royal horse's ass, you know, because that, you know, now my throat's acting up.
Now, see, the throat is acting up, Phil. You'll never get it out.
All right. Thank you very much, Margaret.
Well, look at you blowing me off.
Yeah, get lost, because I want to talk to Harvey.
Margaret, I'll talk to you guys later.
No, I'm not going to hang up.
There, I hung up on her.
All right.
So, go ahead. Koufax.
Well, look, don't be a smartass about it, okay?
No, I want to hear about the Sandy Koufax.
Sandy Koufax was pitching against the Cub. The Dodger was on its way to meet the Twin. And they would
The Minnesota Twins.
No. They were on their way to meet a Twin who was one of the kids that they'd promised a home run ball to. So the Dodger went to see the Twin.
Where?
In Phoenix. Is there a problem you got or something that you don't speak English?
I speak English, man, but I'm telling you, I'm going to start crying.
What a baby.
Well, why don't you speak the English language that I speak?
What am I not saying that you don't understand?
The Dodger is on its way to meet the Twin. I think you're talking about the Minnesota Twins.
No, if I'm talking about the Minnesota Twin, don't you think I'd say that?
You said Dodger?
Yeah, that's the name of the team.
Well, Twin is the name of a team.
No, it's the Twins.
Get out of here before I go nuts.
What did you do? You hung up on Harvey.
That's right. The Twins.
Brother, I want to hear about a perfect game of Koufax pitch.
Get out of here with Koufax. I don't use plural names. So anyway, I can tell you all you need to know about Sandy Koufax. It was Koufax. It was in 65. The Dodgers beat the Cubs 1-0. Perfect game. They went on to beat the Minnesota Twins in the World Series. And what now?
It's Margaret.
Yeah, Margaret.
I thought that was extremely rude of you. Very, very rude for you to have...
Get out of here, will you, all of you people? We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
And then there was another pitcher by the name of Catfish's Hunter. It was, yeah, they pluralized. Or Catfish Hunter, that's it.
Phil Hendry.
Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. It's great to have you with us here. Thank you very much. I'm Phil Hendry, Bud Dickman, and Robert Leonard along the way here in our news and information hour. A reminder that tomorrow, episode 8 of the free Phil Hendry podcast will be available. Go to our home site, philhendryshow.com. You will see there a banner on the left side of the page for our podcast, and I would encourage you to hit that. And head on over and not only download episode 8, download all of them, man. We've got now 8 episodes, obviously.
Yeah, that's why I'd say 8, there'd be 8.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, download all 8 and have yourself a ball, man, and like that. So that's tomorrow. Get a backstage pass and become a part of our BSP family as well. There's all kinds of stuff going on. All right, so I guess we got to get to this, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty sick, but I guess you got to.
Low lights from day 3 of the Sandusky trial. This is about as sick as it gets, but it's to me, it's a fascinating case. Not because I'm interested in this sort of crime, but I find it fascinating because it's so much was involved in this, and I'm still personally stunned, and I suppose you got to be a sports fan, but I'm still personally stunned with the rapidity, with just how fast Joe Paterno went from being, you know, I mean, an icon in football, not just college football, but if you mention the sport of football, American football, and you're going to Vince Lombardi, and you can talk about Paterno's name is going to be in there in the first paragraph or so, if you're just talking about the overall, you know.
What about Pop Warner?
Yeah, Pop Warner will be in there, you know.
What about Alonzo Stagg, too?
Okay, are you guys listening to me?
No, just you don't want to leave it out.
I'm talking about Paterno. Forget about Alonzo Stagg and Pop Warner.
Well, they were big.
Really? Were they big? Did they die of lung cancer after one of their coaches was caught fondling some kid?
No.
Then that's what I'm talking about. God. Anyway, the lowlights from day 3 of the Sandusky trial, they came so fast and furious on Wednesday. The cringe-inducing allegations of years of child sex abuse by former Penn State football assistant Jerry Sandusky, lodged by a parade of witnesses, that even a veteran Philadelphia attorney was stunned. Lawyer Tom Klein said, quote, "It's just remarkable how many children one man can shower with." Klein, who represents one of the witnesses, said to reporters outside the Belafonte, Pennsylvania courtroom, comments. What does that mean? Klein's comments came after jurors heard from 3 more witnesses who claimed that Sandusky sexually abused them when they were troubled adolescents, as well as corroboration of 2 separate incidents when Penn State staffers stumbled onto the ex-defensive coordinator assaulting boys in a campus shower. Now, wait a second. Staffers? There's more than one?
That's plural.
Yeah, but if Harvey Weinman was reading it, it would just be staffer.
Oh, well, that's great. Well, I'm glad Harvey ain't reading it. Good Lord. The panel also saw the clip of Sandusky's famous interview last fall with NBC's Bob Costas, in which he hesitated when asked if he was sexually attracted to young boys. And prosecutors are barely halfway through with presenting their case against the former top assistant to late football legend Joe Paterno in the scandal that has roiled the Happy Valley campus and led to allegations of a criminal cover-up involving top university officials. They hope to wrap their case by Friday. An expressionless Sandusky sat mostly still at the defense table during testimony, occasionally turning his head to look the accuser in the eye. So, here are some of the lowlights from Wednesday's court action. By the way, I'm quoting the word lowlight. That's not my characterization. That's from the Philly.com. And I also want to say here, before I get into the lowlights, Bob Costas, who, you know, deserves whatever credit he deserves, but the people that have been doing the real reporting here are the people that work for the local paper there in the Penn State area. They're the ones that did the spade work. They're the ones that went in and did the real hard reporting that began to shed some light on this. Bob Costas, this guy did a he's a celebrity reporter is what he is. Bob Costas is a celebrity journalist. Whatever journalism Bob Costas practiced in his life, it wasn't involved in this Sandusky interview, and I'm going to tell you why. And I already told you why, but I'm going to tell you again. Bob Costas conducted a competent interview. It wasn't a great interview. People were blown away by the stuff that this dumbass Sandusky said. People were blown away at how well he could lie or how badly. People were blown away at just the sheer horror of the things he's accused by. But Bob Costas' interview was about as mundane a thing as you've ever heard in your life. Basically, what Bob Costas did is he did his job. But today, in this society where we have so many people that don't know how to do their job, a guy like Costas who comes along and just does his job, that's amazing to us.
What do you mean? I mean, it was a pretty good interview, though.
Well, it was a pretty good interview. But I'm telling you, the real reporting here was done by the print media on this one. It wasn't Bob Costas. I just, you know, I'm sorry, forgive me, but I don't get bowled over by Bob Costas and the sports journalists of America. I mean, none of those guys knocks it out of the park, in my opinion. They're all just sort of half-assed. They do sort of a, you know, whatever, a competent job. And fine and dandy, man. This is some pretty serious stuff. And, you know, what you need with something like this isn't a sports journalist. Excuse me, folks. You need a journalist. Sports journalists are guys that stand in a locker room and try not to piss a guy off as they're asking him why he hesitated before he tried to steal second and he got caught out and he got caught stealing. That's what a sports journalist is capable of doing. You want to talk about the sports journalists that have really ripped the lid off of stuff, whether it's the steroid thing, whether it was the covering the Curt Flood reserve clause story. I mean, the big stories down through the years of sports, those guys are few and far between. Guys that write, I got a belly full of these guys when I was down in Miami. I'm not going to go any further in terms of the situation, but I had a whole bunch of these guys for about a month turn on me. Why? Because they were too busy licking the ass of a Miami Dolphin. Now, you got a choice between a guy who does a talk show, which is what all of those jackasses want to do, and a Miami Dolphin. Whose ass do you think you're going to kiss? The sure as hell ain't going to come to my aid, because first of all, they need to stay tight with the Dolphins. So even if they got a lie, they're going to say what a great bunch of guys they are. And even if the Miami Dolphin himself is in the wrong, you think they're going to report that? When the other side is Phil Hendry, talk show host, a guy who's got a job that they think they could do better than me, which, of course, no, they can't. But, hey, you know, hope springs eternal, man. So,
Yeah, you're just mad at those guys.
Well, no, I mean, this is based on my experience with sports journalists. Sports journalists, that means hard-hitting is, this is what hard-hitting is in the world of sports journalism. It's really hard-hitting if you ask a guy, is that really what you wanted to do on third down? I mean, gee, a swing pass when you could have just, used the full, that's the real tough stuff that those guys do. Yeah. We're talking here about children, the future of the psychology and the lives of these kids, what this guy, this Sandusky is accused of doing. This is serious stuff, man. And I listened very carefully to the Bob Costas interview. It was competent. It covered everything. There was nothing particularly remarkable about it, and it certainly wasn't anything that the print media that had been working on this story for months and months and months and months before Bob Costas rolled into town with his blow dryer, could ever think of doing. That's all. If I sound like I'm being harsh, I'm just being honest. I mean, this is the truth. I'm laying it out here for you. You think Bob Costas is going to sit down here and disagree with me? The answer to that is no.
No, I can call him up, try to get him on the show.
I'm not going to get out of here, get him on the show. Hey, Bob, that was some really, boo, hard-hitting stuff. What did you ask that guy, Bob, that those cats for those newspapers didn't ask? Nothing, Phil. Thank you. All right, so anyway, here are some of the lowlights from Wednesday's court action. A former foster child, now 25 years old and identified as victim 10, testified he was threatened against telling anyone what happened between him and Sandusky. He told me that if I ever told anyone that I'd never see my family again, said the former foster child who alleged that Sandusky uttered the threat after the coach pinned him while wrestling in the basement of the Sandusky home and performed oral sex on him. Jeez. Another witness said he stayed quiet because he didn't want to stop getting tickets to the hottest game in town, Penn State football. Identified as victim 7, the witness said he was 10 years old when he met Sandusky through the Second Mile charity in 95. He's now 27. He said Sandusky showered with him repeatedly, embraced him during sleepovers, and was wrapping himself around me, holding me tightly when he slept over at Sandusky's house. And you know the other thing about this that makes me want to vomit? This was a charity. You know, this guy started a charity, and I believe the charity is now done, man. They shut that thing down. They'll never, you know, I mean, the stink talk about wrapping yourself around something. The smell that wrapped around that charity, forget it. Jurors were allowed to hear hearsay evidence about alleged abuse of a youth known as Victim 8, but whom prosecutors have never been able to identify. Judge John Cleland ruled that a co-worker of Penn State janitor Jim Calhoun could testify about what Calhoun, now suffering from dementia, told him in November 2000. Co-worker Ron Buck Petrosky said that when he encountered Calhoun in a football team locker room, the janitor told him he had seen Sandusky, he didn't realize it was a famous coach, making a boy perform oral sex on him. Petrosky said that Calhoun's face was white and his hands were trembling.
And he was a black guy.
You don't know that.
Why don't you shut up with the jokes? He said, Buck, I just witnessed something in there I'll never forget the rest of my life. That man that just left, he had the boy up against the shower wall licking on him. You got to be putting me on. All right, well, there you go. I don't even know that I want to read this now anymore. The stuff is so sickening, I think that I'm just going to let, you know, I think I'm just going to let it play out, man. This cat, if this stuff is true, now it'll be interesting to hear. This is the prosecution wrapping on Friday. Monday, it's going to be the defense, and we'll see what they say. We'll be back, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, with the final segment of our show.
Truth PhilHendryShow.com. Is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
By the way, after the show, you can go to our website, philhendryshow.com, and check out a log of the activities of tonight's show. And you can also sign up there for a BSP or check out the shop, Father's Day right around the corner. And if you go to our Phil Hendry Show shop, by goodness, you can see all kinds of things there. We have our legacy CDs. We also have a download available of our 1994 Best of CD from Miami. I was talking about Miami tonight and just the things that we were doing in those days. If you'd like to get a download of our 1994 Best of CD, you can do that at our shop. We also have downloads of all of our legacy CDs. Or you can buy the physical CD, the artwork. It's all in its original packaging. We do autograph two of them. I think the 2000 will autograph and the 2001 will autograph as well. We also have the Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie. We have our official Phil Hendry Show coffee mug. We have the Bobby Dooley keychain. We have the official Phil Hendry Show shot glass. And in terms of clothing, where is it? Our T-shirts? Yeah, there's the T-shirt, the ball cap, and the hoodie. So check it out, philhendryshow.com for Father's Day. Now, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I was just talking with my close personal friend Dan Northcraft about that. You've seen this, right, bud?
Yeah, it looks pretty radical. I want to see it.
Yeah.
Well, okay, and that's fine. And
you gotta loosen up, man. Let you know, just have some fun.
Yeah, I'm having fun, man. Pardon me. Let me just point something out to you, if I may. Okay.
Oh, here we go.
What does that mean, here we go?
Every time I want to go see a movie that is going to be fun, you're going to say all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, how come let people talk about it?
Well, because I'm doing a talk show, and I'm going to talk about what I feel like talking about, and you two guys are going to shut up and listen to it. That's why. How about that?
Okay.
I'm not making a big deal out of it. I just told you guys already. You know what I'm talking about. The Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, to me, is a pretty funny premise. And not so much funny as it's just, you know, if you think about it, check this out. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter finds out after his mother is killed. Abraham Lincoln's mother died when he was very, very young. This is true. She died of some rare disease, but nonetheless very identifiable. She didn't die from a vampire, but in the movie, she dies from a vampire. Abraham Lincoln then swears that he is going to find these vampires. This is in the film, right?
This happened in life?
No, it's in the movie.
Oh.
God. I'm not going any further until you two guys tell me you know that there weren't really vampires that he was fighting.
No, I know that. I thought you were saying it was.
No. So in the movie, Abraham Lincoln goes out, he starts killing these vampires. Now what does he find out? He's president of the United States. And what does he find? That the plantations in the South are obviously using slaves. Why? Well, because they want to bring in the crops, but also because the plantations are owned by vampires, and the vampires are using the slaves as a cheap or free source of food. They're sucking the blood out of the slaves. And so that's how the slaves were killed. You see, when slaves died on the plantation, it wasn't because they were just beaten to death by cruel, despicable human beings. Oh, no. No, they were vampires. So I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. I just noticed this stuff. To me, it's a very curious movie coming from liberal Hollywood because I say liberal Hollywood because, you know, if you cats that make movies, just listen to what I'm saying. You got a movie here, not only are you saying that, gee whiz, we're off the hook for all of those butchered up slaves because vampires did it. Here's the other thing we're saying. Abraham Lincoln didn't go to war to fight to free the slaves. The North didn't go to war to free the slaves. The North went to war so that we could kill vampires. So this is another movie, man. It's another bit of Americana. It's another bit of American cultural flim-flam that further sort of gets us off the hook or gets a certain segment of us off the hook for a horrible thing called slavery, right? Now, I know people enough, and I certainly know talk radio enough to know there's all kinds of people out there right now either turning the channel or turning it off because they don't want to hear me talk all this smack because they already got it all figured out. And, of course, no, they don't. And how dare you, Phil, bring this up? And haven't we dealt with it? No, we have not dealt with it. If people are turning their radios down and they don't want to hear me talking about it, no, we haven't dealt with it. I'm not trying to hang anybody again for anything. I'm not trying to open up any wounds. I'm just saying it just cracks me up, man, because I've been around enough people in my life to know. I know when people are avoiding a topic and when people are dealing with it. And every bloody time I bring this up, you know, I'm faced with people, white people, that don't want to talk about it. Okay, fine. You don't have to, and I'm not going to. I won't bring it up again, only to tell you that this stupid, silly, jackass movie, which I'm not going to go see, I wouldn't go see it, bud, with your money.
Why not? It's just a bunch of fun.
I know it's a bunch of fun. I get it. But I'm just not going to reward the producers of the movie. Yes, I know it's fun, and yes, I know it's something, you know, and yes, 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 yes. But the fact of the matter is, it's a movie that is, you know, taking, it's just one more little bit of burden off the back of the real perpetrators for slavery, and now we can say it's about vampires.
Well, if it's symbolic about vampire, that the vampires is like a plantation owner.
Well, what do you mean symbolic? What does that mean?
Well, they're doing like the vampires are a symbol of the bad people.
Well, that's just, as far as I'm concerned, just as dishonest. You don't need to symbolize them. Call them what they are. They're human beings. They're real. They're like you and me. What do you mean vampires? That means that those people are somehow different from us. No, they're not. The people that butchered up their fellow man as plantation owners are people like you and me, and turning them into vampires and making them into demons and making them into... That is just another way of not dealing with truth.
Man, you're getting too heavy with this stuff, man.
Oh, get out of here. You want to know something? When people tell me that I'm getting too heavy with stuff, that's another way of saying, Phil, would you please just let us march quietly off to the ovens and not be bothered by you and your truth?
But you ain't getting no—you don't have the truth.
It's my truth, isn't it? Is it my truth?
Yeah, not truth.
I didn't say that it was. It's just my truth. I'm just expressing my truth. And by the way, here is the hell is this? This is the Battle Hymn of the Republic. This is Abraham Lincoln's theme. We can now call this the theme of the March of the Vampires. The world-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Henry. Please join us again tonight for another edition of the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And, of course, join us over at philhenryshow.com for a marvelous BSP. Become a member of our BSP family. You'll be glad you did. And don't forget to see Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter because, man, that's fantastic. It's really great. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Until then, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Henry.